following interview is with Samuel Rich, owner of Rich & Sons Nursery. Born in Salem in 1905, he moved to the new town of Orenco along with his family and the Oregon Nursery Company. He tells of the rise and fall of the town of Orenco, the Oregon Nursery, and the attendant rise of the nursery industry here in Washington County. But to begin, I'd just like to start by having you introduce yourself.
Well, my name is Sam Rich. I'm a second generation nurseryman. My father having started working with the Oregon Nursery Company in Salem in the year 1900. And in 1980 moved up to Orenco and built the town of Orenco. So I grew up in this area and started working in the nursery at a very early age.
What year are you born then?
1905. I think I was about 12 years old when I started working in the nursery. And the Oregon Nursery Company went out of business in 1928. We bought an old roll top desk the nursery had used. I was cleaning out the drawers one day and happened to find some payrolls that had slipped down underneath. And it happened to be the year that I started working. So I recall that my pay was 75 cents for a 9-hour day.
Wow. You mentioned then you're the second generation. How did your father become involved with nursery?
Well, he had come over from France as a boy of about 15 or 16. He lived in Kansas for a while and then came to Oregon. I guess he went to the nursery looking for work. So he worked there as a laborer for a while. Then when they moved up to Orenco, they made him field superintendent, so he had charge of the whole growing operation for 1,200 acres.
Mm-hmm. Then before the nursery moved up to Orenco, it was a viable operation down in Salem then.
Oh yes, yes. It was started by a couple of Scotchmen, the name of MacDonald and McGill. I've got some old catalogs here. Might be the original date. I've forgotten just when that was. Oh, 1867 they started their operation, and their principal production at the time was fruit trees, because it was about this time that the fruit industry became a major factor in the Northwest in Oregon and Washington, Idaho, Montana. So they grew fruit trees by the millions for this market. And their downfall was possibly because they overextended about the time the market dropped out, the bottom of the market dropped out. So they were left in a sorry financial position.
They began in 1867, you said?
Yes.
How'd they come about picking Salem to begin their operation? Where were they coming from before?
They were Canadian, but why they picked Salem, I don't know. It may have been the soil that attracted them. However, I think they ran into certain problems down there, like peach tree borers that were in the soil. So they moved up to this area because it had somewhat heavier soil, didn't have that problem.
Now this will probably be mostly on hearsay or what you heard, but what was this area like before the company moved up here to this particular area, what is now Orenco? Are you familiar with that?
Oh yes. Well, there were no railroads. American Electric, which is now Burlington Northern, was considering that putting a line out here. They were instrumental in having it swing up through Orenco. Their shipments all went out by rail in those days, carload after carload. Mm-hmm. And also the express depots piled high every day during the shipping season with bundles of trees. And they didn't wrap them in burlap or paper like we do nowadays. They grew rye straw, 6 feet high or so, and they used that for packing around the trees so they wouldn't get damaged in shipping. And well, they built a 2-acre warehouse to store the trees in and grade them, shipping them out. They had one man who did nothing all year round except make boxes, crates for shipping in, usually about 8 to 10 feet long, 3 feet by 3 feet square, or 30 inches rather. But the area around here is considerably more timber, although from here on out is known as the plains, and there were no forests when we came up here in this area. They started about here and went that way. So a good deal of the land has been cleared since, during my time. The roads were a pathetic thing. They were just dirt roads, and in the real muddy spots where it was almost impossible to get through any other way, they used what they call corduroy roads, poles cut maybe 8 or 10 feet long and laid crossways in the road. So you can imagine riding over that with a steel rim buggy or wagon. And sometimes they used planking, and it was not uncommon for these planks to be floating around during the bad winter months. Of course, hills or streets were like that at the time too. Railroad, I'm not sure which year it was built, but very soon, or about the same time the nursery came here. And then this line was put in 1912. It swings up this way.
Was that the year that the nursery came to this area then, 1912 or thereabouts?
No, they came in 1908. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the railroad. Was the railroad put through this area particularly for the nursery? Was there some kind of?
No, it extended on to Forest Grove, I think. Maybe even gone down farther. There's a lot of competition between the Southern Pacific and Oregon Electric at the time. And I think there's a race of who would get to Corvallis first. The Southern Pacific apparently won out. But as long as I can recall, the Oregon Electric Service stopped at Forest Grove.
What do you think would have happened to the nursery business if that line hadn't gone through this area? Would it have hurt the nursery business then, as far as getting the nursery stock out to market?
Well, I think they would probably had to put their warehouse somewhere else. It would have been exceedingly great handicap for them to have to haul everything to a railroad line which had been rebuilt or somewhere near there.
When the nursery moved up here, did the owners buy it from farmers that were living here at the time?
Well, I'm sure they did.
Do you think that you were just shopping around for any open space, or was there a particular reason they chose this area here?
I really don't know why, unless it was because there was a large open space. I don't know any other reason. I think it's part of the old Hawthorne estate and part of probably Isaac Butler estate. I don't know who all the original owners were. Their horsepower was horses. I think they usually had about 40 or 50 horses, perhaps even more, to do all their farm work. Trees were dug with a digger, a U-shaped blade with four steel wheels on it. And it took anywhere from 6 to 20 horses to pull that, depending on the size of the trees and nature of the ground at the time. It was a pretty rugged affair. Used to feel so sorry for those horses that would wallow in that mud and stumble and fall. Kept getting whiplashes to keep them going.
Was that what they were growing mostly at the beginning here, were fruit trees when they made the move?
Mostly, yes. But more and more they got into shade trees and some shrubs. But the main line was trees of one sort or another.
Did these nurseries require quite a bit of acreage to operate then at the beginning?
This one?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I think they started with about 600 and then they rented other land around and bought more until they were running 1,200 acres at the time I was working for them.
And this was all planted in fruit trees then at the beginning?
Fruit and some shade trees.
Well, what would they do? Would they plant seedlings? Yes. And then grow it for what? How long would they nurse it along?
The seedlings at that time, I think, were all imported from Europe, mostly from France, and they'd be grown 1 year in the seed bed, and then the roots would be pruned and the tops cut back. Planted out here, and the first summer after planting in the spring they were budded, and then they had to grow either 1 or 2 years before they're marketable. The orchards planted mostly what they call whip trees, 1 year old whip trees, and the retail market preferred the larger trees that were branched, so they were headed off about 32 inches high and grown into a branched tree.
What were the markets like when they first started here in Orenco? Were they local, national, international?
Well, the fruit market was mostly northwest. They just couldn't grow enough trees to satisfy the demand when all this orchard country was being developed.
Were there other nurseries here in this area at that time?
The only other one I know in Washington County was J.B. Pilkington, and they were over at Durham, or near Tiger. And out east of Portland, I'm not sure when any nursery started there. There was one which later developed in Portland Wholesale Nursery that was quite a large operation. But they really developed rapidly from that time on. A lot of them had their start right here. They got their know-how here and went out from there. There was Settlemyer's Nursery at Woodburn, which was quite a large operation too.
Joseph Seko also got a start here, is that right? The man out in Cornelius.
Yeah, I think he worked here as a young fellow. But he went into Camellia's and Rhododendron's. They didn't do much of that here. So I think he learned that either on his own or from someone else.
Well, what was your father's involvement in the company then? Was he, what kind of work did he do for the company?
Well, he was field superintendent, so he gave orders what to do, you know, which field to plant in, and where to put wheat, where to put oats in the idle fields. They had an excellent field management program. When trees were harvested, they would usually plant a grain crop and then plant red clover in it, or sometimes rye or a mixture, and that was all plowed under and not harvested at all for a crop, but all plowed under for green manure. And of course, all the barnyard manure from their stables was spread out in the fields. So the quality of the trees that grew was very good, sizable considering that they had no irrigation.
What kind of men were Mr. McDonald and Mr. McGill? Were they, well, could you describe their physical characteristics and their attitude toward business?
Mr. McDonald was quite a large man, quite a tall fellow, a very serious type person, very community minded. Mr. McGill was I would say a more personable character. Both of them Scotch Presbyterian stock, so one of the first things they did was to build a church in the community. And I don't know whether they built the schoolhouse or whether the it was built with tax money, but a good school was built immediately. Deep well was dug, not really a deep, but a huge well with a lot of water capacity. That was a source of water for the town that they built. They laid the town out and planted trees in all the streets, and built a store, hotel. So it was a bustling little town of about 300 people. They sponsored, I think, probably first Washington County Fairs were held here in their buildings. They promoted that sort of thing. So they were very community-minded men.
They must have been rather good businessmen, too, to start a new venture up in this area that was relatively new.
Well, they were very aggressive. Good promoters. That's evidenced by the catalogs they put out in the literature that they had. I really don't know what their training as young men was, whether they had horticultural training or whether they picked it up on their own, but they must have good background because even their original catalogs were all quite botanical in nature.
Did you know both of them personally then?
Oh yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, in those days 25 cents was a lot of money, and Mr. McGill tried to get me to talk, and I wouldn't do it even for 25 cents. I've got Timothy Guy kid.
Were these two men well known among the people living in the town then?
Oh, everyone knew them. Sure, they were the town.
Was that their original plan then, to come up and build a nursery and then build a town along with it? When they first began?
Oh yes, that was done immediately.
They had plans for the city then, or the community?
I'm sure that was all done before they moved up here.
Then everyone that lived here in Orenco was associated in some way with the
one
nursery.
One or the other. Either as employees of the company or running stores or providing other services or school teachers, that sort of thing.
How many people are we talking about then? I think you mentioned, what, 300 people living in?
There were about 300 in the town itself. I'm not sure how many employees in the winter, but I would think somewhere between 50 and 100. And during the summer, they hired just lots of kids to rack buds and do weeding and that sort of thing. Kids had come from Hillsboro and Forest Grove, everywhere on the train, and hike out the fields to work.
It was quite a place for summer employment for young kids. Then. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can explain how the town got its name then, just for...
Oh, got its name, it's a contraction of Oregon Nursery Company. O-R-E for Oregon, M for nursery, and C-O for company. Quite simple.
Is that something Mr. McGill and Mr. McDonald thought up? Or?
One or the other, I'm sure.
You mentioned the workers. Now, I understand there was a group of people of Hungarian descent here in this area. Could you tell me a little bit about them?
I don't think, well, I'm sure they didn't all come over at once, because I remember when some families arrived. But it was about this period that quite a community of Hungarians came over, I think via Cleveland, Ohio mostly. And how they heard about Orenco, I don't know, unless the nursery may put out an announcement of some sort that they're looking for laborers. And they mostly lived in the southeast portion of Orenco, across the creek. And as time went on, they built their own little church over there. They didn't have any stores or shops, but they did have the church was sort of a community center for them. And some of those fellows have gone on into business, made success. One of the most successful is the Holmeson family. You could neither read nor write when they came to this country. In fact, never did learn to. They didn't know how to spell his name, so some of the women made a name for him. It's Holmason.
He had a Hungarian name before that, then.
Mm-hmm. Either Hungarian or Romanian. Some of the people were Romanian. But he went on, when the war came along, they couldn't get the seedlings from France. So Mr. Holmeson started growing seedlings for them here on contract. And this grew into a tremendous business for him, so he ultimately became the largest seedling grower in the United States. So he shipped seedlings all over the country.
That must have been quite an accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. And now they have a huge nursery down in Sowie Island and also in Sunnyside, Washington. So they've made their fortune several times over. Motts and Son up in the hill for another family of the Hungarians, either Hungarian or Romanian. And they've been very successful. Savo family down the road is another one. Savo's son didn't follow along his father's line. He went into the cabinet business. They've done very well with that.
How many Hungarian families did come over, did come from Cleveland then, or that area?
I could only guess. I think probably 15 or 20 of them.
15, 20 families? Or? But they were originally from the old country then, before they arrived in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Some of them, when they got here, couldn't speak any English.
Did they maintain their traditions from the old country then, or?
Well, the older generation did. The younger ones, of course, changed. Of course, the Holmeson family changed dramatically. When they became successful in the seedling operation, they built a big modern house, had cars, and motorcycles. The oldest boy was killed in a motorcycle. I think he had a slip spot on Canyon Road. So they had some tragedies among them.
What were some of the traditions that the older generation clung to or held on to that were maybe different or unique in comparison with the rest of the town?
Well, I don't know that I could point to anything specific other than in their food. Of course, my dad had to work quite closely with him in his job. So it was not uncommon for us to be invited over to some Sunday festival or something, and their food, I remember, is quite different. Like, I don't know what they call the different things, but they had pies that were made out of cottage cheese, maybe cottage cheese and spices of different sorts added. I know that they used poppy seed quite freely, but beyond that I can't say too much about their way of life. I had supper with a family that lived just down the road from us one time. I remember they all ate out of one bowl in the center of the table. There was one fellow was quite a burly fellow, and he smoked the strongest tobacco I've ever experienced. And he never quite knew how to take a fellow. He insisted my older brother go home with him one evening. He went kind of trembling, not knowing what in the world was in store. So they got down to the house, and the fellow took him in the bedroom and wondered what in the world they'd take him in the bedroom for. The fellow got down his hands and knees and reached under the bed and started rolling out watermelons. They gave him a whole bag full of watermelons, the small ones. They brought the seed from Hungary, and they were yellow inside, not red, but yellow.
Then. Well, then the families were pretty much accepted, the Hungarian families were pretty much accepted by the rest of the community then.
Oh, yes, sure. Baseball was a thing that time, and some of those fellows are really expert baseball players. I think the Orenco team sort of dominated the area, like Beaverton and Hello and so on, and baseball. This is a picture of the office building they put up and landscaped. And the president's house was equally as large. It's his estate is now the Orenco golf course. And the vice president's house is about the same size, which is only about probably 300-400 yards from the from this building, from the office.
They're quite impressive looking houses. It must have taken quite a while to put to build these houses, eh?
Well, I'm sure it did. This is the hotel that they built, which was operated by the Barwick family. So it's really quite an establishment.
I'm just curious, you were mentioning about the baseball team. I mean, the Hungarians just picked up the game then, and just like everyone else?
Mm-hmm.
Are there many Hungarian families left in this area? You mentioned a couple, the homeless.
Sabo's down here, and Moss is up in the hill. I think that's about all that are here anymore.
They just moved away, or?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the town itself must have grown rather rapidly once the company moved in.
Yes. See, there wasn't too much else going on except the nursery itself. So it got up to this point quickly and then was stable as long as the nursery was here.
What were some of the activities going on in the town outside of the nursery, say? Was it... Was it just your normal town, just like any other town in the area then, or?
Well, it was quite an energetic little town. They had a military band, which to me as a kid was the most wonderful thing in the world. Had a good director by the name of Jim Sheehan. Everything was, let's go, you know, it's a real live wire. A lot of enthusiasm.
This band, they would play occasionally for the town, or was it made up of people from the town?
It was all town people. I worked for the nursery mostly. I don't recall how often they had their concerts, but generally, they were in the schoolhouse or in the summertime in the park. The park adjacent to the schoolhouse, they were in the church. The nursery had built a little park adjacent to the church near the school, put up a bandstand. So I remember the concerts they put on there. And I think they even had some sort of horse races at times, if I recall.
When you were younger, was there much contact between the other towns in the area with the people of Orenco, Hillsboro, say, Reedville?
Well, Hillsboro was the shopping center for them, excepting for what they could get here at the local store. Other than that, I wouldn't say a lot of contact.
But
the town was pretty well self-sufficient then.
Yes, they had a hardware store, grocery store, later on another store, boarding house. Ice cream parlor, barbershop.
It must have been rather a friendly town. I mean, with everyone working at the same place and knowing everyone else, it must have been quite a social bond between the members of the community then.
Well, there really was.
Mm-hmm.
They had a print shop, Mr. Mead Redden, print shop. Everything with a bank, I guess.
Was it an enjoyable experience as a young kid growing up in the town then? Was there?
Well, we grew up out here. We weren't in town. So the only real contact we had was at school. Of course, my older brother played in the band. I was just a little kid at that time.
When World War I came along, did that affect the nursery business, the nursery stock, the late teens?
I really don't know what effect it had on the sale of nursery stock. I was too young to know or care about things at that time. But I'm sure it had an effect on the manpower because it drew quite a few of the fellows away from nursery work to work in the shipyards, which paid more money. So the train traffic between here and Portland, passenger traffic increased a great deal.
Who did work in the nurseries then during the war? A lot of the men were working in the shipyards.
Well, there's some of the older fellows and some of the more loyal fellows that stayed. And then they used a lot of truncheons too, I'm sure at times. Much of the work could be done by them.
Truncheons, you mean migrant laborers coming through, or?
No. Probably Burnside people. They still use a lot in the nurseries.
They would come out on the trains and in the Oregon Electric?
Yeah.
When did you get your start in working in the nursery then?
I was about 12 years old. So it would have been about 19. Either 16 or 17 when I started, so during the war.
And what was your first duties or first kind of work?
First job was tying buds.
Is that where everyone starts out then, doing that type of work?
Either that or weeding. This work was done mostly during July, August, and September. Tying buds involves, at that time, tying a strip of raffia around the bud which had been inserted in the seedling near the ground. And the purpose was to keep the wound closed so it wouldn't dry out. Later on, that had to be cut off. In the 30s, the rubber companies started developing rubber strips, which replaced the raffia. So they finally got them to the point where they would deteriorate in about a week to 2 weeks' time, and would break off by themselves, wouldn't have to be cut off. So those are still being used today.
Did your responsibilities expand as you continue working for the company?
Oh, not really. Not really. Except when you go from tying the buds to doing the budding, which is more of a technical job. And then about the 20s sometime, they put up a lot of green houses and shade houses to do their own propagating of things that need to be started from cuttings indoors. So I shifted over to that department. I worked in the greenhouse and in the shade house.
We were talking about, you were showing me the photographs or the pictures of the homes then. They must have been quite, were they quite the showplace for people to come out and look at, or?
Well, I presume so. The office building has been torn down, but the vice president's house is owned by Dr. Pittman in Hillsboro. As I said before, the other one is on the golf course, still being used. So they're still, you know, real fine mansions.
Did you ever have an opportunity to go inside when Mr. McGill was, or the vice president was living in at the time?
No. I think I was in the front entry once and Mr. Mitchell lived in it when he was his successor to Mr. McGill as vice president.
Something that I gathered from a newspaper article said that on June 21st, 1913, 300 nursery men from all over the country gathered here in Orenco. Now, you were 8 years old at the time. Is that something that stuck in your memory, or was that a big event, or was that just some business type of arrangement?
Well, I don't know whether that could have been the American Association, or more likely the Pacific Coast Association of Nursemen. It was a very active group at the time. So they'd have their conventions at various areas. I remember my dad going to one in Salt Lake City, and to another one down in near San Jose, California, that area. So it was a boom time for nurseries all over in that period.
After the Orenco nursery got its start, then did other nurseries follow in this area during the 10s and 20s? Well, Washington County, Hillsboro area.
Well, not really until the Oregon nursery went out of business. Then the others, like Motz's and Savo's, and Enchity Nursery, and ours. And then there's some others that some of these fellows started elsewhere. No, really nothing else at the time.
You mentioned not until the Orenco started to go out of business. What caused that? Why was it, what was the circumstances surrounding the decline of the company?
Well, friction between the two major men, Donald and McGill. I think largely centering around McDonald's determination to have Mr. Mitchell come into the organization as sales manager or something of the sort. And Mitchell and McGill could never see eye to eye. So things just went from bad to worse. Finally, McGill pulled out. I guess in the settlement arrangement, They agreed to pay him a huge sum of money, which I doubt if they ever were able to pay completely. And that coupled with Mr. McDonald's tendency to overplant, I think brought it to a crisis.
When was this then, this crisis? What time are we talking about?
Well, they finally had to close it up about 1927. I think it was 26 to 28 is the period when they went out of business. But they couldn't grow enough apple trees. So finally they planted 6 million apple trees. About that time, the bottom dropped out of the market, so most of those were burned. When they went out of business, they had the block of 300,000 birch trees. And that's a lot of birch trees at any time.
Did the company just go bankrupt then?
Mm-hmm. They were in receivership for quite a while and finally closed up, sold everything off, sold the land, everything.
What happened to McGill after he left the company then? Did he go on and?
Yes, he moved out east of town, started growing things out there. And a lot of they grew a lot of stuff out here for him as payment of debt, I guess. So he went on to establish a very large nursery. He and his son Wayne won the nurseries of best reputation in the country. Still in operation. It's run now by a third generation Peter McGill.
Was then McGill really the brains behind the behind Orenco Company then, or was it?
Well, I couldn't say who had the brains. I would think McGill was the better businessman of the two, I would guess.
What happened to Mr. McDonald?
Well, he kept the name Oregon Nursery Company. And he operated a small nursery and had an office in North Portland, Northwest Portland near Montgomery Ward. So he would buy from growers here and there, sort of jobbing operation. He lived to be quite an old man. And after he passed away, his daughter carried it on for a while. She's gone now, too.
What happened to the town of Orenco then, after 1927?
Well, it sort of deteriorated. The one store kept operating for quite a while. The hotels and boarding houses and barber shop and the hardware store, printing shop all folded, left town. But it's a nice community to live in, so people, I don't think there are ever any houses vacant for very long. Just left town, have roads and everything so people could commute to other jobs.
Did most of the people that worked in the nursery then move on to other nurseries, or did they?
No, they went to other occupations for the most part.
And then they stayed here then?
Some stayed here, some of them moved away. Sought other things.
Did the town then just gradually lose that spirit you were talking about, that enthusiasm?
Oh yes, it lost it completely. Just a very different place. Even the school is gone now, so there's really nothing left there excepting the church. That's about the only community thing that there is. It's part of the West Union School District now. Even had a high school at the time. I took 2 years of high school there, and they closed it up.
Was it pretty sad or hard for you and your father and other people in the town to accept that the town was gradually disappearing?
Well, it's, you know, my age, it didn't have a great bearing, but I'm sure it was an ordeal for anybody involved in the nursery.
I have something here that I also read in the same newspaper article that during the height of the city town of Orenco, they filmed a movie here in 1924. Do you have any recollections of that, or what that was about?
I really don't.
Okay, well, once the Orenco did collapse, what did your family do? Did you begin, pick up again another nursery? Is that where?
No, we started growing. We started growing on contract for Mr. Mitchell had been sales manager before he was vice president of the nursery. So he operated under the name of Orenco Nursery Company, and we grew trees for him. We did the growing, he did the selling.
Then your business just gradually expanded?
Yes. He died very suddenly in 1937. And we were left pretty much without a market then. His widow continued to run a nursery, but sales just started to decline quite rapidly for her. So we got into retail at the time, selling wholesale on our own as well. So we put out a small catalog, I think in 1937. Retail catalog, and gradually built it up to quite a large color catalog, which drew orders from all over the United States and foreign countries. Even after we quit putting out a mail order catalog, we kept getting requests from all over the world for years afterwards. But now we're strictly wholesale.
During these intervening, or these years during the 30s and 40s, did the nursery business, your nursery business and the whole industry as in this area continue to expand and grow?
Yes. There's a very dramatic growth in the county. Our business grew, Moss's business grew, and when they had another nursery over at Beaverton that was doing very well, the Drew's Nursery. And Carlton Nursery moved up here from Carlton, Oregon. They moved up to the Forest Grove area. And they became one of the largest nurseries in the area. And Glenn Walder started. He has a huge operation now. fellows from Utah came out and started the RNS nursery. And they do a huge business shipping, mostly to stores, so throughout the Northwest or Western states. And then there have been other smaller ones operating through the years. So it's taken on quite a major complexion in this county.
Has the nursery stock itself changed? You mentioned initially it was mostly apple trees or fruit trees. Has that grown too?
There's been a dramatic change. In earlier days, it was only the wealthy people who had landscape yards. Farmers might have a bush or two around, you know, and that sort of thing. So the major demand was for fruit stocks, you know, something they could harvest. And that has changed so dramatically that the demand for fruit has diminished. I mean, the demand for fruit trees and the demand for home planting is overwhelming now. And then the Highway Department got into the act, and Oregon is the leading state in the nation as far as landscape planting is and our highways are concerned. And now the new developments are so different from what they used to be that there's a great demand for nursery stock there. It's hard to believe it. We are shipping many, many truckloads of big trees to Salt Lake and Denver now that you know, the average homeowner can't afford to buy 6 to 8, 8 to 10, 10 to 12 foot trees and shade trees with calibers from 2 to 4 inches. The average homeowner can't even think about buying a great many of that. So it's just hard to realize where it is all going, mostly the public works. You know, the new developments where they put in a few big trees to make it look like it's been there a while.
Is Oregon just, and Washington County in particular, just especially suited for the growing of nursery stock in comparison with any other place in the West, or?
Well, no, not particularly. Multnomah County for years was a leading production center, and now I would say it is probably Multnomah and Washington County and Clackamas County are the major centers. Part of that is because it's central to Portland, and the nurseries in general are quite interdependent. No one can grow everything, so there's been a tendency through the years for them to trade back and forth. If you get an order for this item, you don't have to get it from the other fellow. He needs something you have. And then operations like Tuples and Portland Wholesale and some of the others to a good extent are not essentially growers. So they depend on buying from smaller nurseries, and even the larger ones in the area. So it tends to bring the nurseries to regional areas so that they don't have to travel too far to deliver their goods. But with highways developing and so on and so forth, there's a tendency for them to start in farther down the valley. So stock has grown pretty much from here all the way to Roseburg. And then Washington has its big areas. fruit and shade trees and back them on Sunnyside and up to Wenatchee. Western Washington doesn't have huge nurseries, but they have quite a lot of them. They grow limited quantities of material, but they don't have a huge acreage that they do in the other areas.
Do you think then that with the continued rise of affluence and building of highways and so on, that the nursery business will continue to grow and grow?
I expect it will. I can't even estimate how many carloads, truckloads are shipped out of the state into the central states, into the eastern states, into Canada. It's hard to conceive the huge market there is in areas like Salt Lake and Denver. Of course, California is full of nurseries and has tremendous production. Truckload after truckload comes into Oregon from California.
Well, I think we've covered it pretty well. I don't have any more prepared questions unless you would like to add something in closing. Or
I don't think of anything right at the moment.
Well, I appreciate you spending time with me then. I think we've covered quite a bit of ground in the short hour we've talked.
Well, could you describe their physical characteristics and their attitude toward business?
McDonald was quite a large man, quite a tall fellow, a very serious type person, very community minded. Mr. McGill was a more personable character. Both of them Scotch Presbyterian stock, so one of the first things he did is to build a church in the community. And I don't know whether they built the schoolhouse or whatever it was built with tax money, but a good school was built immediately. Deep well was dug, not really a deep, but a huge well with a lot of water capacity. That was a source of water for the town that they built. They laid the town out and planted trees in all the streets. And built a store, hotel. It was a bustling little town of about 300 people. They sponsored, I think, probably the first Washington County fairs were held here in their buildings. They promoted that sort of thing. So they were very community-minded. Now,
were these two men well known among the people living in the town?
Everyone knew. Sure. They were the town.
Was that their original plan then, to come up and build a nursery and then build a town along with it, when they first began?
Oh yes, that was done immediately.
They had plans for the city then, or the community?
I'm sure that was all done before they moved up here.
Then everyone that lived here in Marengo was associated in some way with the
either as employees of the company or running stores or providing other services or school teachers, that sort of thing.
How many people are we talking about then? I think you mentioned, 300 people living in?
There were about 300 in the town itself. I'm not sure how many employees in the winter, but I would think
in 100. And it runs solidly hard with lots of kids to wreck buds and do weeding and that sort of thing. Kids that come from Hulthrow and Forest Grove, everywhere on the train, and hike out the fields to work.
If you will now please punch the rewind button so that the tape will go back to the beginning for the next people to use.